Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, Prabhupada Ki. Thereafter, Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya, understood that the materialistic association of husband, friends, and relatives is like the association in a hotel full of tourists. The relationships of society, friendship, and love are created by the Maya of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, exactly as in a dream. By the grace of Krishna, Devayani gave up her imaginary position in the material world, completely fixing her mind upon Krishna. Completely fixing her mind upon Krishna, she achieved liberation from the gross and subtle bodies. Purport. One should be convinced that he is a spirit soul, part and parcel of the Supreme Brahman, Krishna, but has somehow or other been entrapped by the material coverings of the gross and subtle bodies, consisting of earth, water, fire, air, ether, mind, intelligence, and false ego. One should know that the association of society, friendship, love, nationalism, religion, and so on are nothing but creations of Maya. One's only business is to become Krishna conscious and render service unto Krishna as extensively as possible for a living being. In this way, one is liberated from material bondage by the grace of Krishna. By the grace of Krishna, Devayani attained this state through the instructions of her husband. Om Agyanati Miranda Shajananjana Shilagaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobistam Stabitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vancha Kalpa Tarubhyas Cha Kripa Sindhubhya Ivata Patitanam Pavanipyo Vaishnavipyo Namo Namaha Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Kadadara Shri Vasari Gaura Bhaktavrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So we're wrapping up this part of the Leela. So I thought maybe we would just kind of recap a little what we went through. Devayani and her friend, Shamista, and her maidservant friends were bathing naked. And Lord Shiva came by, and they got very embarrassed and shy, and so they were finding their clothes and putting them on, and Shamista accidentally put on Devayani's clothes. So then Devayani is standing there, exposed and embarrassed, so she gets fried out, and starts speaking to Shamista, telling her that what is going on here is like a dog stealing ghee that is meant to be used in a sacrifice, and what's the other one? This is like watching a sutra taking charge of the Vedas. So she's really letting her have it. So of course Shamista gets fried out and says that actually your whole family is like a bunch of crows, and then pushes Devayani into a well. So now she's in a well without any clothes. Of course, Shamista and her friends, they just walk off. They're like, "We can't even." I think that's the expression in America. So Yayati, he's out hunting and he's thirsty. So he comes to the well thinking, "Now I'll take a nice cool drink of water." And lo and behold, there is Devayani naked in the well. So what to do? Of course, he's, sense of duty, he's a kshatriya, so he helps her up. And Devayani takes this as, he's holding my hand, he's seen me naked, we're married. So Yayati is a little bit like, okay, that was fast. Not exactly your traditional Vedic arranged marriage, but, she's kind of good looking and we're here, so let's go with it. He goes with it. Now, Devayani, she's not done, because she's still fried about the whole thing with the well. So she goes to her father, Sukracharya, and complains about the whole thing. So now he gets fried out, and he goes to Shamista's father and complains about the whole thing. So Shamista's father, what's his name? Rishabharva. He's a Kshatriya and Shukracharya is a Brahmana. So of course he's embarrassed by the whole thing and he goes and says, look, this is not good, so what can we do? And Devayani says, easy, your daughter and all her servant maid friends are now my servants forever. So that's your classic, you know, feminine way of solving things. You'll just be my servants forever. Like a guys have a problem and they'll figure something out. Like you eat 40 pakoras and then I punch you in the stomach. You know, that's a guy's way of solving a problem. It's very uncomfortable. But it's physical and it's temporary, so we know what we're dealing with. Women, they're much better at this, you know. She gets a deal for life. So now they're living now with Yayati. They're married, and Shamista is there, and now Devayani wants children. So nature takes its course, and she has a son. But that makes Shamista jealous. She also wants a son. So she requests Yayati for sex so she can have a son. Now, the deal is, for a Kshatriya, he can't actually refuse. This is actually within religious principles. That's one of the more exotic elements of Vedic culture. We see also when, in the first canto, Arjuna comes back to Yudhisthira, and Yudhisthira is asking about why are you so dejected? I mean, what's the problem? And he actually suggests, have you refused to give a woman a child as the possible cause for his problems? So it's actually a Kshatriya duty. So she has a son. And it goes a little back and forth, and it ends up with Devayani has two sons and Shamista has three. So when Devayani finds out, she gets fried out again because why me two and her three? This is not proper at all. So she goes to her father again and now he gets fried out again. So he places this curse on King Yayati that he will become old before his time. Now the problem is that Shukracharya, he knows religious principles. He actually knows that he did nothing wrong. It's just he's attached. You know, he's attached to his daughter. He gets fried out. He's a Brahmana. It shouldn't happen, but it happens. And another point is made by Prabhupada that actually deep down he knows that his own daughter is kind of lusty. She's a conniving little person. So she won't be happy with this arrangement either. You know, because basically Yayati, he can't, well, enjoy anything, you know. So this is not actually going to work. So this adjustment is made that he can switch with anyone, you know. Anyone who would be willing to give up his youth can then switch with King Yayati and he can have his youth back and he can enjoy again. So that's kind of, you can't undo a curse, but you can kind of fiddle a little around with it. So that's what's being done here. So Yayati, he's very attached. This is why the whole thing with the well and suddenly we're married and the children coming out everywhere, because he's attached to women. You know, he shouldn't be, but he is. He wants to be a devotee, but he can't help himself. So he goes to his children and says, look, daddy's got a great idea. You give up your youth and I become young and then you become old and we'll all just work from there. So the older sons, they're like, okay, thanks dad, but no thanks. Really not what I had in mind. The youngest son of Shamista, Puru, he's more qualified than the others. And he knows that actually everything in the world runs on sacrifice. There is no real material enjoyment anyway. So, and I can't really make up for the fact that my father has given me this birth. So, okay, deal. You got it. So they make the switch. Yayati is happy, Devayani is happy, and they go on enjoying, and they do sacrifices and enjoy for so long. But what happens is that no satisfaction comes. Instead, the hunger for enjoyment just grows, because the only place that the satisfaction from material activities exists is in the material mind. It's not actually real. That's why we see the more someone tries to enjoy something, the more they need of it, and the more, it's like addiction, like drug addiction, like addiction to gambling or eating or whatever it is. You increase how much you consume of it, and you still don't get any satisfaction. But because the mind is locked in this illusion that I will get satisfaction for it, you increase in quantity. That's what illusion is. So he goes on for so many years, and the hunger just increases, and there is no satisfaction. So finally he realizes, wait a minute, this is not going to work. This just doesn't work. So then he gives it up. And then he relates this story to his wife, Devayani, about the he-goat and the she-goat we nicely heard about yesterday. And she also understands, wait a minute, this is not a story about goats. This is about you and me. She's not, you know. So she also understands that actually it's true. This is not actually working. This whole scene, for her, is more of a social scene. That's what started the whole problem, right? That she's actually a Brahmana and Shamista is a Kshatriya of caste, and then suddenly she's in an exposed position. So the whole social status of the thing, that's more of the feminine focus. The masculine focus is more the straight up sense enjoyment when they're in material illusion, right? So she sees, like we see here, from her point of view, thereafter Devayani, the daughter of Sukracharya, understood that the materialistic association of husband, friends, and relatives is like the association of a hotel full of tourists. Yeah. So she sees that this whole scene that she's been dealing with is actually useless. It's useless. And then by the instructions of her husband, they achieve liberation, right? So the point being that it doesn't really matter how you understand this, as long as you do. In this case, there were a bit of twists and turns, and it took a little longer than maybe it had to, but they got there, so everything is great. It's recommended in Shastra that you renounce based on intelligence rather than really getting out there and getting it done for so many, like thousands of years or lifetimes or however long. Because it's pretty logical. If you can understand it and you don't have to go through it, then that is, I mean, by all accounts, easier and better. No matter how you get there, you get there. So today is Hera Panchami, right? This is the festival 5 days after the Jagannath Ratha Yatra, and it's the festival where Mother Lakshmi becomes very frustrated and very angry with Krishna, or Jagannath, Lord Jagannath, Krishna, because she thought he'd just gone for a little ride, and now he's been gone for 5 days, and he's not coming back, so she's quite frankly a little peed off. So she goes with all her associates to the temple where Jagannath is and breaks his the Rath cart, right? Because now it's time to come home and, you know, what you're on about, right? And then she goes and he comes back. So she kindly invites him back to the temple, right? So you can say this is a leela between God and intimate associates, and it's a whole festival. So what's the difference? You know, there's anger and there's intrigue and there's a whole trip going on. Well, the difference is that here in the latter, it's favorable for the Leela. It's done favorably for Krishna. In this first story, with all the, you know, it's like, kind of like daytime television drama you have here, with the curses flying everywhere and kids with this one, kids with that one. This is not done as a favorable service to Krishna. It's done out of actually false ego, right? So that's the key. All the rest is the same. The activities are the same. The gopis and Krishna are constantly teasing each other and making trouble for each other. But it's done to serve the Leela. So we have to not necessarily change the external activities, but the mood of the activities. That's what devotional service means. Now, Prabhupada is expert in everything he does, so he calls it devotional service. Sometimes you can read books by other great personalities, and they describe prema as kind of like divine love, right? But what is divine love? This is a very nice point that Parashuram made to me recently. What is divine love? It's like, it sounds like you just lean back and think, and you know, divine, and oh, it's nice, you know, and very peaceful. But where's the activity? If you say devotional service, you have devotional, that's the divine love, and you have service, that's the activity. It's dynamic. That's why Krishna consciousness is the supreme philosophy and culture, is because it engages everything that is already there. So we don't actually have to change much in the externals. We have to change the mood. So instead of false ego service, we do devotional service, right? That's the key. That's the key to it. So you can keep doing false ego service as long as you want. And then at some point you will understand that this is not actually working. And then all you do is you switch it to devotional service, right? So... And we see here is that everything is, I mean, this is not even Kali Yuga. We're talking Dwapar Yuga here, and everybody's fried out, even the Brahmana is fried out. So we can see that this component of Varnashram is not enough in itself. Like we talk about Varnashram, and should we not? Yes, we should, but we should not think that that's the answer, because we can see here it all starts from Varnashram. The whole drama starts from the fact that Devayani is in a superior position compared to Shamista, sorry, and the whole thing gets switched around, and it fries her out maybe a little more than it should, right? And then when Shamista retorts, she calls Devayani's family a bunch of crows. That's not random. That's because they're brahmanas. So they're technically living off the kshatriyas, right? So crows, they hang around and pick in the garbage of humans. So it's all permeated with Varnashram. It's everywhere, you know? But the understanding, of course, is that Varnashram can't solve our problems. It can't actually ultimately solve our problems. It can diminish them in the material sense, and it can create like an environment where we can function. But the ultimate solution to the problem of birth and death and false ego, only devotional service can actually get us out of that false ego. There is nothing else that works. We can even take it so far as nothing works without devotion. Not even material activities work without devotion. So it's a matter of how personal is this devotion. So if you see, let's take a successful businessman, he's very devoted to his business. What does that mean? It means he's very devoted to the rules of economics. Who gave those? Krishna. So he may not be devoted to Krishna. He may not even understand Krishna is there, or there's a person behind all this. But the rules he's following very nicely. So the benefit is there. There is no benefit in terms of self-realization, but the financial, you know, growth is there because he's following, he's with devotion, like a teenage boy who hasn't been following his school all year and tomorrow is the exam. He's very devoted to his books, you know, these school books, he's very devoted. if he had kind of stretched the devotion a little bit throughout the year, it probably would work better. But nevertheless, the devotion is there. Nothing actually works without devotion. So that's what will get us out. So then the whole Varnashram concept becomes support. It's all about the chanting. It's all about, you know, the service, the programs, temple, prasadam, all these things. But the Varnashram will put us into a system that will kind of make it function nicely, because everyone knows kind of where their place is, what to do. So the problem for us is that we think that social position or material possessions, these things have value on their own, that there is a value to it that goes beyond its connection to Krishna. And that's why we're in the material world. So when we understand that it doesn't have any value on its own, then we can engage it properly. And then it will be disentangling rather than entangling. So, because this is Kali Yuga, we are kind of lenient on the whole Varnashram thing. But one thing I've noticed is that we can be very strict when it comes to the upper castes, like Kshatriya and Brahmana. If they do any little thing that doesn't really correspond with our way of, then some have a tendency to just deride them completely. But as we see here, even in Dwapara Yuga, you have, you know, Kshatriyas and Brahmanas who, they just get overwhelmed by the material energy. This little daughter he has, Devayani, she's far out, you know, she's really getting it done. But because it's his daughter, he gets emotionally involved in it. It doesn't mean he's not a Brahmana. It just means that he's not acting Brahminically 24/7, you know, because there's a difference between Brahmana and Brahminical. We're not all Brahmanas, but because we're engaged in devotional service, we're all acting Brahminically. So there is only one culture, that's Brahminical culture. But there are various Varnas, of which one is the Brahmana Varna. That's different. You don't have to be Brahminical just because you're a Brahmana. You can be total nonsense, basically, even though you are still a Brahmana. You know, it's Brahman is the activity, and Brahminical is the mentality, the consciousness, right? So we should understand that, and this is why also Bhagavad Gita says that even if someone commits the most abominable action, if he's engaged properly in devotional service, he's still to be considered saintly because he's fixed in his determination. He wants to serve Krishna. He wants to be a pure devotee, and so it's only time that separates him from that position. And we have the example of someone who's taking a shower. It doesn't really make sense to go and point out you're dirty, because he's already in the shower. So it's superfluous. It's a disturbance. So in the same way, we're all engaged in this movement. We're all trying to be sincere and truthful devotees, right? So fault finding is a very it's unnecessary and it's very destructive, you know, because basically we all have Paramatma in ourselves. So we all know when we're doing something that's not really working out. Maybe we're so covered that we don't always notice it or realize it, but for sure when someone points it out, then it can be very painful. So the whole thing about pointing out when someone is doing something improper or we don't agree with it should be dealt with very delicately and very carefully. There are basically two parameters, you could say. First of all, do you have the position to actually do it? Is it actually any of your business? Because the first, Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokula Nandaki, Shri Shri Sitaram Lakshman Hanuman Ki, Koranitai Ki. Because the very first instruction of Bhagavad Gita is do your duty, followed by not anyone else's duty. So do your duty, not someone else's duty. So if the new bhakta is doing something not right, make sure you have the right relationship with that bhakta before you correct him, right? Being superior is not enough. Just that, no, I'm in a superior because I got a Brahmin thread, I got everything, you know, saffron, all, you know, that's not enough. Either, because there's a difference between being an authority and being superior. Being the authority means you're in the position. Maybe you're the bhakta leader or your temple president or something, guru. That's the authority. That means you can instruct that person who to whom you are the authority, right? Just being superior is not enough. Usually it can be more of a disturbance than actually an assistance. If someone random who's very superior comes over and says, look, Prabhu, you're not washing the floor correctly. It's like, you know, you feel like the whole temple is against you and looking at you like, oh no, what's he doing over there, you know? So it's a very delicate matter because we are an authoritative culture. We respect authority. That means that the authority has a great responsibility. It means it's not enough that you've been around for 15 years. You actually have to have the position. So that's the first parameter. Second parameter is, do you actually know what you're doing? I mean, do you actually know, because we have this, oh, tough love, you know, or just surrender, Prabhu, or get off the mental platform. Get off the mental platform, just pro tip, has never been said by anyone who's not on the mental platform. It is, by definition, mental to say, just say, get off the mental platform. It's not an argument. It's not an instruction. It's just, don't do whatever you're doing. And it doesn't even relate to anything specific, right? Get off the mental platform. That's the red flag right there. So you have to know what you're doing. If you're working with someone's false ego, you have to work with it, right? So we give the example of someone who has a broken leg. You don't ask them to go for a run with you. It's not going to work. But hey, you're not the body, Prabhu. But the body is the body. So if you want to go for a run, you need the body. So in the same way, if you want to do anything, you need the mind and you need the false ego to be kind of involved. You can't just say, get off the mental platform. It's like, where am I going? You know, I'm off the mental platform. Where am I now? You know, so we have to work with it. We have to work with the mind. And that means being kind and being constructive. Instead of saying you're doing that wrong, saying maybe it's easier if you do it like this, or I usually do like this. And then let the other person, himself or herself, figure out whether he or her would like to do it like that, you know? So this is, you know, this is extremely important because we are like family. And we do intense service together. Our lives are about service. We're giving. We're giving ourselves. We're throwing ourselves at this movement. We are hyper religious. I mean, how many Christians get up at 3 a.m. and start meditating? I'm not criticizing Christians. I'm just saying that our program is intense. So we should be very careful not to fry each other out. Because we can do that. And when you've had like 4.5 hours sleep and for 2 nights running, and that was me one time, 2 nights running, 4.5 hours sleep, and then I was giving class the next day and I was just so tired, you know. And then afterwards, someone comes with a very well-meaning constructive criticism. Not even destructive, but constructive criticism of the class. And everything she said was true. But I was so tired that I was just unable to deal with it properly. You know, I kind of cut her off and I think she got a little bit offended because she was actually being nice. So, but the point is that we're in sometimes in an intense environment and the festivals and everything has to be ready. Now Janmashtami is coming up. It's a whole circus, you know. So we should be very careful about, dealing properly with each other. And it means that we should accept that we all have false ego. We all have a mind that has certain habits that we're trying to break, but we haven't broken them yet. We're not Paramahamsas. Sometimes we hear devotees saying, you know, we're devotees, we're beyond the modes. No, we're not. We're trying to get beyond the modes, but that we're beyond these designations, that is the same as saying we're all Uttamadikaris. We're all completely... I mean, Prabhupada, he was beyond the modes, right? Lord Brahma is not beyond the modes. So what? Where are we, you know? So Lord Brahma, he runs around after his own daughter. He gets fried out at his own kids. And the same with Sukracharya here, you know? So we have these things going on like anything. But that's not the point. The point is, what are we trying to do? It's like a mother has three children. One is 16, one is 8, and one is 2. Right? So the 16-year-old is doing the dishes, the 8-year-old is practicing to write properly, and the 2-year-old is just trying to walk straight. So is there a difference in the love from the mother to those three children? No. But there's a difference in the activity. If we judge them by the activity, then the 2-year-old is a nonsense, you know? Useless, you know? But that's not generally something the mother would point out, right? Because it's all seen in relation to the actual position, the actual situation. What is the child dealing with? So, Bhakta Jose just walked in the temple, and he's fired up. He shaves up within a couple of weeks. That's fired up. Great. That's wonderful. I'm not talking about you. I'm just saying. You're doing great. He got up himself for Mangala transfer. Yeah. You were actually awake when I pushed you, right? So we should see it in relationship to where are we actually. We can't, serving prasadam. There's a whole thing with it has to be right hand and the serving spoon shouldn't touch the plate and all these things that if you know, you know. If you don't know, you just don't know. It's not because you're stupid or less devoted or anything. It's just how would you know? So all these things we have, these little details, we should be very compassionate when we spring these things on others. And generally, this is just me speaking, if you're not the Sankirtan leader or some leader of the Bhakta course or whatever it is, don't point it out. Because it can be that all sorts of people a new Bhakta has never talked with before, they come and correct him. And sometimes it's like conflicting instructions. It's like, no, you should do like this. And then someone else senior comes and says, no, actually, you should do it like you just did it before. And then you're like, uh-oh, now what do I do, right? So if we're very careful with this, and it means careful with language, and that's what we see in this story, that there was some miscommunication. There was a lacking of proper communication, right? Because the emotions take over. And so we start... seriously, Devayani? It's like watching a sutra take charge of the Vedas. So what? Your dress is the Vedas? What is that? Or ghee used in a sacrificial fire. So she's a dog and you're the ghee that is sacrificed for the god. It's a little over the top, you know. It's a little bit, but that's what happens when we get emotional. We forget to limit ourselves. So it's just practice. Now, on the other hand, you have when it happens to you, like someone gets fried out with you. Again, leniency. You know, I recently had someone get really fried out with me, and I'm very happy that I didn't respond to that email the same day that he sent it, because that just diffused the situation a little bit. I thought about it for a day or two, and then I sent a reply back, because when I got that email, I was like, who does he think he is, you know? And yeah, I came up with a really nice long letter I could have sent, but I'm happy I didn't, because we have to, on either way, even when we're the quote-unquote aggressor, we should limit ourselves. But when we are being mistreated, or at least we feel mistreated, again, we should be compassionate, because this is Kali Yuga. Again, we're one yuga down from this, and we're in the West, you know, and half the time we're not even chanting properly. So we got a whole card deck stacked against us. So So we have to remember that everybody else also has the cards stacked against us, you know, because otherwise it becomes easy to see all the difficulty I'm going through and then just imagine that everybody else is just cool and it's just going smooth sailing for everyone else, right? So then it's not devotional service. Again, the devotional service is the mood. Then it becomes again about my false position, all this hotel full of tourists, you know, all these fake values of social position, of family and extended sense gratification, all these things, and even dharma, you know, because this guy who sent me an email, he's a junior to me, so he should be properly, and I can quote Shastra to justify it, but is it constructed? Does it help him? You know, is it compassionate? No, because it's even said here I think it's Prabhupada who mentions in the purport that religion is also just a creation of Maya. So even we're quoting the Shastra and we're doing everything properly, still, if it's not compassionate, if it's not meant to help, then it is absolutely useless. That's the final instruction of Bhagavad Gita. We had the first instruction, do your duty, not someone else's. And the final instruction is, give up all these varieties of religion. Because what is varieties of religion? There is only one religion. So the variety of religion is based on your mind and your false ego. So it's all this thing that you use your own mentality. You use religion to kind of further your own mentality. It's according to religion, but it's misapplied because it's not ultimately bringing anyone closer to Krishna, right? That's the point of the 11th canto, again, in Bhagavatam, is that piety is sinful. If you look at it as something being pious, then you're not looking at it as Krishna. You're looking at it as piety. It's impersonal. It's technically sinful, you know? So if it's not directly connected or helping others connect to Krishna, then don't do it. It doesn't matter how many shlokas you can quote. It's not useful, right? So that's the trick, and that's the task at hand. And it seems like a tall order. Like now, I'm just throwing out all these things out there. But if there's one thing, because sometimes I'm giving class and I'm thinking it's going pretty well, but afterwards I'm thinking, what do devotees actually take? From this, how can they apply this? One word, compassion. You know, regardless of how much someone is a nonsense or how mistreated you feel, have compassion. Because it's happening to you because Krishna is telling you something. And it's happening to you because you can actually overcome it. And if you think you can't, it's because you're too much attached to these temporary material things, right? Now, it is very difficult because the material energy is very strong and we are very small. But if we want to get better at it, compassion is the key. So I think I'll open up for a question or two now if there is anything, chastisement, corrections, glorification of Krishna.